Hola, hello, bienvenido, and welcome to Chatty Carmens, a podcast that gives female-identifying changemakers of color a platform to share their projects, stories, knowledge, and experiences that have shaped their careers and movements. We are here to inspire a new generation of Carmens, and I'm your host, Michaela Santiago Frobel.
Welcome, bienvenidos, buenos días, buenas tardes. I am here with a singer, songwriter, and experienced arts administrator, Michelle Amador. Say hello.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. I feel so honored to be a part of this exciting podcast. I'm really looking forward to this. So thank you for having me.
I'm extremely excited to have you on, especially since you have taken your art and created not only a career, but you still are doing your art form as well. And I'd love for you to talk a bit about your journey. I don't want to give too much away. I want you to really, really talk about yourself here.
Sure. I mean, you know, it's an interesting thing to, right now, I feel like I've been reminded kind of time and again this last few months that I am an artist. I know that seems strange. Like I have continued to be an artist from, you know, my teens till now, but I'm also a mother. I have a 5-year-old. I work a full-time, you know, job in nonprofit arts. And in many ways had like, you know, you just start to feel unsure of yourself that, you know, okay, am I an artist? And I remember even last year, Mark Morris, whom I work for, introduced me to a musician. And he said, Michelle's a musician. And I was like, who told you that? Well, right. I mean, not like he doesn't know, you know, whatever. I gave him my resume when I applied, you know. But, you know, it's just one of those things where I was like, oh, no, right, that's part of me. Oh, stop talking about it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like a tap on your shoulder, like, what? I'm a what? Yes. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And I've had several, like, you, yeah, came, you know, then you were reaching out to me, another friend reached out to me for our artist, an artist, Ruth Chase, who's doing a visual arts project, reached out to me, and another collaboration with a bass player and composer, really exciting project. It's an opera, a podcast opera, which I'm not an opera singer, just to anybody who goes to my website looking for that. Sorry. but, you know, it's a really interesting, modern composition, incredible cast that is documenting the first chat rooms, and like the psychology and the community and a lot of her research. Wow. It's like, she's like, there was so much positive momentum about, you know, about building these communities, these online communities, and what that would provide for us as a society. Mm-hmm. So that's a really fun project, and that's resuming. We did our first pilot, I think, a month or so ago, and then we're going to go back in the studio safely. It's just like one person a day. Mm-hmm. In October, November, late October, early November. So I'm excited about that too. And I have some music that I am due to release. So I'm looking forward to releasing that later this year. So yeah, I am a musician. I am a singer. I am those things. And you know, when I think,
yeah,
in many ways, the reason that I work in nonprofit arts is because there's room to be that. There's room to bring that perspective to the work. And certainly, Mark Morris Dance Group, that's welcome and appreciated that I, you know, that I'm not taking a kind of clinical or corporate approach to my work, that I'm really looking at it, you know, on how I can represent the art most, I guess, authentically.
Yeah, no, and that's the huge difference, right? When you're working in as an arts fundraiser, it's a very different perspective to have someone who is, you know, a straight up fundraiser. I am here to get this cash so you can do what you got to do, versus someone who's coming in and is like, I understand the work. I understand the importance. And that's why we're getting the moolah, right? You know,
I mean, I think, you know, like I've told Nancy Umanoff, who's the executive director, like I'm probably the only, you know, fundraiser who doesn't believe in contributed income. Like, you know, I want a world where you don't have to fundraise for the arts, but that's not the world we live in. So I'm happy to fulfill this role. But like, really, I'm not signing up to be a fundraiser. I'm signing up to work for something I believe in, you know, or something I can get behind or that I'm inspired by. And that's really been from the first job to now. I mean, when I actually went to school first for acting, and I,
oh my gosh. What?
Yeah. I went to school for acting. I went to USC, got in the conservatory like program there, the BFA program there. It was a little bit disheartened. I think I, you know, at that time I did not see a lot of people on the screen who looked like me. And I think as I started to audition for things, I didn't feel, and also, you know, part of that program is training you for the commercial future. What is it, you know, to audition for a soap opera and audition for a hot dog commercial. And I just, you know, I didn't, that's not what I wanted to do, you know? So I actually ended up doing more music for theater, which I felt more freedom to express myself however I wanted to. And then even after that, singing really, provided me just to, I mean, I could be, you know, a million roles in one song, essentially. Even with music, you know, I have a lot of friends who are independent musicians, and they, you know, the gigs span a wide range, everything from a restaurant to a wedding to, a lot of different things. And and there's a lot of expertise that comes with doing those gigs. You know, there's, they can step into situations that I can't, but for my own music, it just was too depressing for me to try and sing my music with like a plate of food going by my nose. You know, I just, you know, that or somebody asking me to sing a James Brown song is like, I promise you, you don't want me to sing that song. I just, okay, here we go. Oh
my God. And some people, that's their cup of tea. Some people, that's
their cup of tea. No, it's not. It's not to begrudge anybody's choices. Yeah. That's just for me what I mean, my husband's a drummer, and he has a wide range of different gigs, and that makes him happy, you know? And I there are many times that I have a high regard for musicians who can do it all the time because they have a very high skill level. They can go into a recording, they can read the music right then and there, and, you know, they're set to go. So I don't have those chops, you know, I only have my songs and that's it.
So now take us from you finding your craft and studying your craft to then becoming a arts administrator.
Yeah. Well, so when I left college, by the time I left college, I already knew that despite the fact that I would be getting a BA in political science, BA in political science and a minor in theater, that I was going to continue studying music and pursuing, you know, a career as a musician. And I had pretty hefty student loans. I knew I wanted to live in San Francisco. So, you know, you're in your 20s. You're just like, okay, I found a room for $400 a month. And like, you know, I'm gonna find a job. And I found a job at San Francisco Jazz Organization. And, you know, it was great in many ways. The person that hired me who didn't stay very long after. That was kind of shocking. But, you know, you sometimes you pick a job and you're like, yes, I really love it. Oh, no, wait, you're going? Where are you going? Why did I pick this, though? She really had such a grounded view of fundraising, and that you really have to cultivate and steward the people who are there for the right reason. You know, if you have people who are really more interested in kind of bossing you around or taking advantage of the organization in different ways, or taking advantage of the benefits in weird mm-hmm. ways, right? They're just kind of like pushing on you. It's better if you find yourself in that situation, it's better to just offer that person, and they're dissatisfied. You know, it's better to just offer them a refund, because you'll mm-hmm. spend more money, you know, trying to satisfy that person, and then suddenly have not spent energy on all the people who really are there for the art and are not, you know, focused on themselves. They're focused on making sure the art can get out there. So
yeah,
gave me a great start, a great footing to mm-hmm. have a, like a positive, healthy perspective on fundraising. Somewhat antithetical to the culture we live in, you know?
Yeah.
So, and I think at a young age, that's important, because you're starting your first job, you know, there's already a lot of structures that you're not used to. And to have that kind of experienced voice say, don't worry about that, it's not worth it. Mm-hmm. You know, it was valuable. And I carried that through. I still carry that through, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And so then I think that was my first job. I then went to San Jose Jazz, where had an opportunity to also teach some of the classes while also doing some membership stuff. I was also driving like an hour every day to San Jose at that time. It probably took more in that decade. It was you know, less of a commute. And then I was really sick of nonprofits altogether. I just thought, you know, I don't even believe in this term. I'm mad that they exist, you know, that our mm-hmm. culture requires this, you know. Yeah. So I worked in a grocery store for 6 months, really like a fancy one. So it was almost like I'd get my paycheck and then I'd just buy the cheese and the wine. You know.
Oh, so the paycheck goes out the door because you got that cheese.
Yeah. And I mean, I was married at that point, so I'm thankful that I could lean on my husband at that point to make sure to pay for all the other things that cheese.
Yeah.
You know. And then we talked about moving to New York. And then I got invited to perform at a festival. I can't even remember the name of the festival, but it was pianist Eric Deutsch, who was hosting something in his loft in Williamsburg as part mm-hmm. of the festival. And so I performed for that. And then it was my first time in New York City. And I called my husband. I was like, I think we need to move here. I think that's what needs to happen.
Yeah.
And so then, you know, I mean, he's been a freelance musician since, I don't know, his teenage years. So, but he said, you know, well, we can't really get over there with mm-hmm. me, you know, I think you need to find something in nonprofit that can get us over there. And so then I found a job with Ethel String Quartet, which, mm-hmm. you know, I used a friend, like, it's like a friend of mine was like, you should use my New York address because it's going to be too hard. No one's going to call you if you don't have a New York address.
Yeah.
So I used her Brooklyn address, and then I got an interview, and I think I had some airline points or something like that. So I flew out, but I was like, what am I going to do? I can't fly out to every interview. Like,
yeah.
And yet I remember walking on Smith Street and feeling like, I know I'm supposed to be here. So what's going to happen next? And it's like that night they're like, you got the job.
That's amazing. Like,
great. Yay, it worked. My crazy idea worked.
And now, with that being said, right, you get this job, you move to New York. I love to talk about the cultural influence in this, right? So like, yeah. For example, working in arts. So when I got my undergraduate degree, I got it in business to make my family happy and arts administration to make me happy. So I was like, all right. Yeah. And then becoming a fundraiser and my family still not really understanding what I do. And I'm like, oh, you know, so how did your family influence you? Right. Cause your father was a musician, correct?
Yeah. My father's a musician. He's from Peru. He brought his entire family over, when he was in the army actually for 6 months at a certain time. And you know, big Latin family or maybe not the biggest, but you know, several siblings and a lot of the musicians. My uncle Ezekiel was with San Francisco Symphony for many years. My late uncle Ishmael was a cellist and bass player and, you know, teacher, educator in mm-hmm. San Jose public schools. Very caring, great educator. And really, there's just music. My cousins are full-time musicians. Their children are pursuing music. I think on my dad's side of the family, and even my mom is very supportive of arts. Mm-hmm. They're very, I think my parents are like, why are you still working for someone else? That's, you know, that's kind of their, they're like, come on, Michelle, you can do it. You can do it. You can be your own boss. But yeah, my family's very entrepreneurial. My oldest brother is a writer. He's becoming more and more successful. He won the Humanitas Prize. He's has different plays in readings, and I think he's I don't know if I'm allowed to say, but he has something that's in development with a major company. Mm-hmm. So there we go.
that entrepreneurial spirit definitely leads into the work that you're doing as a musician.
Right. Sure. Mm-hmm. Of course. Yes. And I mean, you know, and in terms of cultural influence, I mean, certainly, you know, your direct parents have an influence on you. And both of my parents are not from America. So mm-hmm. The values that they instilled in me, you know, came from their own upbringing. And I think the proximity of having my dad's family here versus my mom's, which was very far away in Austria, meant that I was more exposed to, you know, my dad's Peruvian family and the upbringing and the kind of, you know, ways of being and the consistent, jovial, nonstop laughter, you know, ribbing. you know, which I love. I mean, that's I still love, you know, smiling and laughing. Who doesn't, you know, mm-hmm. especially these days, right?
Yeah.
I think, you know, and I think in terms of arts administration, it's really strange because I had a moment in the last few years where I think that culturally I accepted that working anywhere would be in a predominantly white environment. I don't know why that is what I had. I think mm-hmm. subconsciously I had accepted that. So, you know, wherever I was working, that happened to be what I was working in, and I just accepted it, you know. And it wasn't really until, like the last few years where there was a kind of broader cultural awakening in arts and culture organizations. Who, you know, several studies were like reflecting back and saying like, hey, arts and culture organizations, isn't it strange that like you're predominantly white? You know, yeah. I mean, you know, stir in you? That I think I really kind of really realized like, oh, you know, this whole time, I've been working in the arts, I thought I'm doing this because I can bring my whole self to an arts job in ways that I can't if it's a more corporately aligned with our mainstream society's values.
100%.
And, you know, and so it has been kind of an interesting time for me to actually recognize that gap of like, oh, I actually am not myself many times. And what is it, you know, I certainly don't feel this limitation as an artist. So what is it? What are the instances where I'm feeling this? And how can I just end that? You know, how do I not propagate that for other people? So like, how do we just like, you know, get over this or get through it?
Yeah. Representation of people from different backgrounds is so important in arts and cultural organizations. Because, you know, it's like the board needs to reflect the community. And, you know, not only that, the arts historically, you know, was for the elite, if we want to be, you know, frank about it. So
the arts that had money, right? The arts that had money. Certainly all cultures have artistic expression, and yes. I think in many ways, like, it's interesting because before I started working for Mark Morris, I thought to myself, like, oh, you know, in my next job, I want to work either in a predominantly female environment or a predominantly non-white environment. Now, yes. Why I couldn't imagine those two together shows you like where where I was in my own limitations of what I could envision, because certainly I could have found something that was both. But, you know, I mean, things happen. The opportunity to work for Mark and with Nancy came up, and it just seemed like it has been an incredible opportunity. And and I think as I've, you know, in these past few years, for me, what has been significant and what I'm thankful for is that the efforts that have been important to me are also shared. So yeah. I'm not trying to push something that doesn't matter to the leadership of the organization. So
yeah.
You know, and in development, the way that I can influence that is supporting board diversity efforts without tokenization, and also understanding that there's a certain amount of tokenization that's inevitable because you're starting, right? You never had anybody, now you do, you know? And so, it's interesting. I'm on the board for Nevada County Arts Council, and a member of board, Shelley Covert, who's a tribal spokesperson for the Nisenan tribe, she mentioned, I hope I'm quoting her right, but she said, you know, when I joined, a lot of people asked me to join their boards, and we worry about tokenism, but when I mentioned it to my grandma, she said, you know what, take that token and run with it. Like, it's just like, you know,
yes.
Like, yes, it is all of those things, right? It is everything at the same time. And so, but, you know, you try to move things forward. And it really, there was a meeting, I think, with the board development committee before, right when they were trying to, like, really prioritize it. And, you know, it's like even hearing someone else, and at the time it was Nancy, say that this is a priority and why, it's just like, you know, tears after the meeting. I was just like, I didn't realize how much this mattered to me. Oh my God, my whole life, you know.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Because it does, you know, it does shape you. It just open up what you see as a possibility for yourself, you know?
Yeah. Now, jumping into something that is at the top of our conversation all the time, COVID-19. And during COVID, you joined an organization, or you helped. Can you talk a little bit about that organization with us?
So in the last year, I discovered an organization called Women of Color in the Arts, which has been a great resource. I think I was looking to it a little bit more when I first joined. I feel like I'm a little disconnected now, so I gotta reconnect. But I think, you know, what it what it helped me connect with is, oh, right, you know, these experiences that I'm having in what everyone is acknowledging is a predominantly white environment mm-hmm. is not actually something I'm experiencing alone. I had, like, it's not just like, oh, is that weird? Mm-hmm. Yes, it's weird. You know,
yeah.
The society we live in right now is weird. Mm-hmm. And so it has these effects in our working environments. And I think, you know, being able to have that,
yeah,
I guess, solidarity or, you know, communication has been a great support for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I also started participating in something called Culture at Three, which is really grew out of the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, it was like, it was almost like a hotline for nonprofits. Like,
yeah,
just call in at three, you know?
Yeah.
And then, so it started out as like COVID focused, but then it obviously turned its attention to Black Lives Matter, you know, for all the reasons. And then out of that, they started an anti-racism committee, which I think is finding its way. I think it's, you know, the Culture at Three spirit of things, as I understand it, I didn't start it, is that it's a gathering space and there's not really a leader. It's not like, oh, I have an agenda and I'm going to put together the week's programming.
Mm-hmm.
It's here's what we have to share and here's what will help everyone, right? Or yeah. Here's what we know. So when they started the anti-racism committee, I think it was just a lot of organizations saying like, well, what could we develop together?
Mm-hmm.
And it just started, so it's still trying to, I think some of the things they've talked about, because you have a lot of different organizations, there's I think sometimes 600 organizations on
wow.
the call.
That's awesome.
So how do you,
mm-hmm.
yeah, so how do you develop a toolkit for that many? You can't really, so you have to figure out, like, what is the most useful thing for that wider range of organizations, some of whom are living the experience, and others who are, like, training
yeah
to get awareness, you know. So it's been, you know, eye-opening and interesting, and
mm-hmm.
I think the other thing that I've participated in that I really really think was incredible, and I think for any arts administrator of color is powerful, incredible, is Art Equity.
Mm-hmm.
They're an organization I think based in LA, but just incredible. I mean, they have some, even the way that they run their workshops, it's like they provide a workshop, but then they provide like a processing space
mm-hmm.
just a few days later for anybody who's like, what?
Yeah.
You know, what did I just understand from everyone? Oh, you know,
yeah.
And I think that's been incredible for me. Just, you know, just to hear and know that you're not alone in a lot of experiences, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Now you have a project that is coming out, right? Can you talk a little bit about the EP?
Yeah. Yeah. So I worked on some music with a producer in Brooklyn, Eli Cruz, who has a, you know, long list of incredible artists that he's worked with. And we recorded at a studio then, actually I don't know if it's still there, but Figure Eight Recording. It was an incredible, you know, it was an incredible experience. It had a lot to do with my thoughts about moving to California, and just, you know, the state of the world,
yeah.
as always, I guess, with every artist. But, you know, and I'm excited about it. I think I'm excited. I think I've held on to it for a second because I'm so excited about it. I don't want it to just kind of go into a corner and then be forgotten. Like, I really want it to get the attention it deserves. And so I'm excited to share it. I have, you know, my press release ready and my new photos, right? I don't have my video done, but we'll figure that out. It's coming soon. There is a sample of it up on my site, michelleamadormusic.com. So there's one track up there right now called Glimmer.
Mm-hmm. And to close out, my favorite question I love to ask all my guests, what chatter brings you laughter?
So this was I'm so glad you asked that question. you know, I love things that are just super out and kind of wrong, you know, like mm-hmm. where it's just like where you're laughing because you don't know what is happening.
Yeah.
You know, so so there's this artist that I just found out about probably a couple months ago named Mark Rebillet. Have you heard of him?
He's hilarious.
Oh my God. I can't wait to send you the link. You are going to cry laughing. he's in his underwear and like a silk kimono robe, maybe. He's like playing beats. And then the stream of consciousness that he's addressing is so right and wrong at the same time. Like there's one that he has that's called Cure for Depression. And that he released, you know, in the last, I don't know, month mm-hmm. or so, when everyone's feeling depressed. And the lyrics are like about putting your job resume together and the interview. And then it's not sounding funny as I'm talking about it, because some things you just have to experience. And let me just say, he is an experience. Like, I think he's doing a drive-in tour, and wherever he's playing, I'm going to go and I'm going to laugh.
Oh,
so
my
hard.
Gosh. We will definitely, you know what, we will definitely share the link on our social media.
I can't wait. You're going to, I think you're going to die laughing when I send this.
Well, thank you so much for coming on as a guest. I hope you have a good time. And everything that we mentioned in this episode will be shared on our social media, including organizations. And thank you so much for listening.
Be sure to check out our social media platforms for links to our guests' work. And thank you for listening to this episode of the Chatty Carmens Podcast. If you or someone you may know wants to be featured as an episode, visit www.chattycarmens.com and select Nominate a Carmen. Adios!